You're listening to the WGN Afternoon News. I'm Steve Bertrand. On a phone line now is Frank Fahrenkopf, the co-chair of the Presidential Debates Commission. Mr. Fahrenkopf, thanks very much for joining us today.
Great to be with you, Steve.
Well, we are in the season, right? I mean, I'm wondering how it is. Is this a relief that for you that we're here, or is this when the anxiety starts?
Well, a little bit of both. I mean, when we start, and if you think about it, we laid out the dates and the locations and so forth in October.
Mm-hmm.
And but actually, it's easier than sometimes. Both campaigns signed on pretty early. I mean, the president wanted an extra debate, and that wasn't going to happen without the agreement of both of them. But we're here, and going to be heading for Cleveland on Monday, and looking forward to what I think is going to be a very extremely interesting and most watched debate, maybe of all time.
You know, I'm just thinking, I was joking before that I talked to you when you were an RNC chairman in the 80s. But you have to go back to the 80s, right, to when a major candidate didn't take part in a debate, when the whole John Anderson stuff was going on with Carter and Reagan.
That's correct. Yeah, Carter, in I was at the first debate. I mean, and then the League of Women Voters did it, and they had the 15% rule, the same rule that we have. And that means in order to be invited to participate, you've got to be at 15% average in the five major polls. And John Anderson was at 17, and they asked him, and he accepted. And then they asked Governor Reagan, and he accepted. And Jimmy Carter said, hell no, I won't go. And so the first debate was held in Baltimore with just Anderson and Reagan. But that makes the point that there is no rule or law that requires a candidate to debate.
Yeah, and
now I think what's happened over the years is it's been so successful that the American people really do expect their candidates to debate.
And of course, John Anderson, an Illinois congressman, is an eloquent guy, those of us who remember him. Okay, so how do you measure success when it comes to the presidential debates?
Well, I guess a couple of ways. I always ask myself the question when each one is over, did the American people and people who watch really learn something that perhaps they had known before? Of a position of one of the candidates, or one of the things I've always looked for when I've always said the one thing I've learned having done 30 of these general election debates, remember, Steve, we have nothing to do with the primaries, it's just the general election debates, is that I don't think that the American people necessarily vote for who they think is the smartest person. They're looking at these debates to get a feeling for the personality of the individual, how he handles pressure, and they want to like their president. Now, we had an incident in 2016 where neither candidate had 50% approval rating. And these two, this time, are not very – I mean, I've seen some with Vice President Biden over the 50% rule, but most of them, they've both been in the 40s. So, I look to see whether or not there's really something that was presented at the debates that will help the American people in their decision making.
Yeah, it's the guy or the woman you want to have a beer with, right? That's kind of the standard.
It's exactly right.
And COVID-19 has, I know, given you a few headaches, right? The first debate was supposed to be held at Notre Dame. It's been moved now to Cleveland. Is there going to be an audience, or
that's one of the major changes. And we were very, very fortunate because when Notre Dame had to back out because of the COVID, the Cleveland Clinic, who we had been talking to about being our medical advisor, in other words, for all of our debates, to helping us with the protocols on health, social distancing, and so forth. And then they also stepped in with Case Western Reserve to be the host of the first one that we're going to have. Now, we normally, over the years, we've averaged an audience of about 900 people. Sometimes it's been 1,200, sometimes 600, depending on the size of the forum that we're making the presentation in. This time, I will be very surprised if there's more than maybe 70, 75 people that will have to be. Now, the facility in Cleveland where we're doing this at the clinic is much smaller than a gymnasium at a university or anything. So I think this will probably be the smallest audience, but my guess is about 70 people spaced appropriately in the audience. And of course, then there'll be social distancing with two candidates on the stage. For this one, it'll be more problem for us when we go to Miami for the town hall meeting, because we normally have between 50 and 100 people from the area who ask the questions. common citizens. But there's no way we're going to be able to have that many. We may end up with only maybe 15 or 20 local citizens.
You brought up
6 feet apart asking the question.
You brought up the primary debates, and those can sometimes turn into a circus. I was trying to remember, we don't generally have applause or reaction from the audience during the presidential debates, do we, or do we?
No, we do not. In fact, the tickets usually say on it, you will be expected not to participate by clapping or making noise and so forth. And then I usually come out on stage 15 minutes prior to the debate, and I fundamentally say to the audience, I said, you know how lucky you are? You're sitting here observing in the flash a historic moment. But there's probably 100 million people watching on television trying to make up their minds, and for you to clap or to whistle or to make noise, you're interfering with the search of these people to find where they're going to vote. And only, I would say, out of 30 debates that we've done, only a couple of times has that rule been broken. Now, I also tell them, the Secret Service is here, and if you make a noise, we'll throw you out. But and then the moderator, when the moderator comes out, he or she also gives that warning before we go on air.
Chris Wallace is the moderator for the first debate. Tough questioner. But tough questioners, that's not necessarily what you're looking for in a moderator, is it?
No. In fact, that's a very, very good question, Steve. And the hardest part for us is to pick the moderators. We don't want someone who's so far one way or the other that the audience is going to perceive them going in to be prejudiced
sure.
in some way. Now, what we did is we changed very much the format, starting with the Obama-Romney debate that was in the University of Denver in, I think, 2012. And what we did there is we took the 90 minutes, and remember, we go 90 minutes straight. There's no ads. There's no breaks. We go 90 minutes, and we took them and divided the 90 minutes into 15-minute segments. And then the moderator, and this goes for the first and last debate, the moderator, a week ahead of time, will tell the world what the six sections are that they're going to concentrate on. And Chris announced it 2 days ago. One section will deal with the Trump and Biden, their records, one on the economy, one on COVID-19, one on race and violence in our cities, one on the Supreme Court. That was a new one that came up, with the
sure.
unfortunate death of Justice Ginsburg. And the last one, the integrity of the election. So those are the six things, areas that he will concentrate during each of the six 15-minute segments.
You know,
and he'll have the power to follow up and drill down.
I know there
That's
was
why we did it this way.
I know there was outcry that the global climate change wasn't one of the subjects, but it's all up to him, right?
It's all up to him. We do not dictate in any way. And, it's clear that now you've got Susan Page, who's going to do the vice presidential debate. She's from USA Today. Steve Scully from C-SPAN is going to do the town hall meeting. And the final one will be Kristen Welker, the co-anchor of The Weekend Today and White House correspondent for NBC News. You can be sure that they'll know that it's not there.
Right.
And one of them will concentrate on it.
Well, you just wonder if the Ginsburg death pushed it off the docket, too. I mean, that's certainly a possibility.
Could very well have, because there's no question that Chris has been working, took himself off the air, as most of them do, interestingly. They take themselves off the week before so that something they say on the air might not be misinterpreted.
It is not Chris Wallace's job to be a fact checker. Explain that for me.
It is not. It is not. We tell them there's a big difference between interviewing a candidate, where if I'm interviewing you, Steve, and you're running for office, and I ask you a question, and you say something, give me an answer that's totally different from what you publicly stated a week before, my job as an interviewer is to say, wait a minute, Steve, you changed your position.
Right,
why did
right.
you change your position? Now, that's not what the job of the moderator is. The moderator is to facilitate debate between the two candidates. So it's not his job to say, wait a minute, you changed your position. It's the other candidate's job to make that argument and go back and forth. That's what it's all about. There's going to be enough fact checkers the minute that show is over. Every network and newspaper in the world is going to have a fact checker.
Fact checker is one of those phrases I'm really tired of. It's important, but boy, it's exhausting. And I saw an NBC poll that said 3 in 10 Americans think that the debate will be important in influencing their decision. And that number was given in terms of that maybe the debates aren't that important.
Yeah.
It seems to me at this point, if there's 30% of us who are still going to be swayed by the debate, I think that's a pretty big number.
Well, we historically always, after each cycle, do a lot of research and do polling of our own. And we're convinced, and our polling indicates it, that 60 to 70% of the American public say that the debate is a factor in who they're going to vote for. It doesn't say it's the only factor, but it's one of many factors that go into their consideration. And so we're pleased with that. There are a lot of people who don't want the debates, but you got to live with what you have. And that's where we are.
Okay, so you've been doing this for all these years now. Which has been the most difficult campaign to work with?
It wasn't a question of being difficult.
Come on, this is the part.
We had some trying problems.
Frank, this is the part where you give us a little dirt on the process. So.
Yeah. Well, God love him, and I respected him. George Herbert Walker Bush did not like the debates, and he felt very much like Lyndon Johnson felt, that you shouldn't bring your opponent up on the stage with you, that you're raising perhaps the credibility that you're giving that candidate by putting him on the stage. And that's why Lyndon Johnson would not debate. And George Herbert Walker Bush did debate, but it took us a little while to get him to the debate stage.
Well, maybe that explains why he was looking at his watch.
Yes, may very well.
Frank Fahrenkopf, the co-chair of the Presidential Debates Commission. It seems like this is sort of a labor of love for you, too.
Steve, you know, someone asked me the other day, you know, why am I doing this? And I said, and it sounds very, very trite, but it's my way to give back to my nation and to this country. When Paul Kirk, who was chairman of the Democratic National Committee, and I was chairman of the Republican National Committee when we created the commission back in 1987, we both shook hands. And we were active chairman then, and we pledged to each other that whenever we were doing something having to do with the debate, he would never wear a DNC hat, and I would never wear an RNC hat. We would always wear a USA hat. And I think the fact that we're still around after over 30 years means maybe we did a pretty good job in keeping to that.
I'm glad that you were doing your service for the country. It was great to talk to you. I wish you great success through the season. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Steve. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the WGN Afternoon News. I'm Steve Bertrand.